Hey everybody, this is folk singer Michael Jonathan, tree-hugging, log-cabin-dwelling banjo picker from the Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour. You know what you call a beautiful woman on the arms of a banjo player? A tattoo. Just saying. You're tuned in to that other Steve Martin, Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass.
My friend Michael Jonathan, the proprietor of Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour, and also just a great performer and songwriter, and kind of a modern, I called him once a Henry David Thoreau. I think he ducked away from that right away, but I know he's down there building his own cabin, and I guess he took his nails with him like Thoreau did, and he's going to find a lake and go out and watch it as it freezes, and just a nice guy. And so Michael and I just casually decided we would come back, get back together today. He was on in January. We had a great time just chatting about whatever. Today, Michael is going to come on, catch up on things that we haven't talked about in a while. In between then and there, very sad event. Michael's, I'll say, co-founder and longtime friend, Kevin Johnson, passed away this week rather dramatically. If you follow Michael on Facebook or follow anything that he does on the Wood Songs Radio Hour website, you will see the devotion that he has to Kevin. Apparently he can tell the story, but Kevin was there when Woodsong started. Called him Darth Fader, F-A-D-E-R, because he was the guy who did all the controls for all the sounds. Today's show is in the memory of Kevin Johnson. Michael will talk about whatever he feels like talking about at this point. I know that he spent a long sad week, saying goodbye to his cohort and good friend, Kevin Johnson. So with that in mind, I think it's appropriate, since Kevin was with Michael in the conception of Wood Songs, and then one from the Front Porch album called Front Porch, because that could be where Michael's sitting right now, on the front porch of his log cabin. I think if I've again pushed the buttons correctly on the phone, should be Michael Jonathan. Michael, can you hear me?
I can.
How are you doing?
Good.
Well, that's good, good. I was telling people at the top of the show that we had set this up a week or so ago, and in between that time and now, then you've suffered a loss in the Wood Songs family, and a very personal loss to you. And we dedicated the show today to Kevin Johnson's memory.
I didn't realize we were on the air just now. I didn't know you launched, man.
Do what?
I didn't know you launched on the air. I'm going, yeah, good, fine, whatever.
Yeah, that's okay, that's okay.
I thought we were still waiting to go on the air.
I'm playing with my mixer. My mixer was broke a week ago, and now it's working again, and I'm probably trying to catch up to where I was proficiency, and I'm not as smooth yet, but I'm relearning it again. So, Michael Jonathan, welcome to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass one more time. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Wood Songs Old Time Radio, one of my all-time favorite shows. It's to me, it's an historical document that takes place every week. It's available out there. You have, Michael, set the template for, I think, every type of radio show, and now a TV show, for so long, of preserving music and American music. And not to downplay your contributions, and you are a performer and an artist and a songwriter, but you have to really be thrilled with where Wood Songs is today versus what you and Kevin thought about many years ago.
You know, you start out with something that's just a dream, and then it becomes a reality, and then it sort of begins running itself. You know, good ideas need to be sustained without you, and it's looking like Wood Songs will be able to do that. And it's because there's a wonderful volunteer crew, and it's got a spectacular audience, both in the region and around the world, and the artists are supporting it in droves, and guys like you, Steve, you know, that are supporters of the concept of the show, not me, but the concept of what Wood Songs is and what it represents to the music and the people who love it. So it's nice to see that a volunteer-run multimedia broadcast can exist when the currency that it spends is love.
Wow, that's I like that. You almost can't put it in a better summary than that. For the folks, if there's somebody out there that's listening to this program, it's not familiar with Wood Songs, tell them, take just a second, Michael, and explain to them the volunteer nature of what goes on, because it's unbelievable that this is done not only from the people who are there helping you and doing things and taking tickets and making arrangements, but the artists, too, that come in. It's a phenomenal event. Can you just break that down a little bit for us again?
You know, the art was never meant to sell. Art was meant to feel and to share. And once upon a time, music and songs were performed for free on front porches all over America, all over the world. It was part of the human right to sing and play. And then record companies came along, and they figured out how to sell vibrating air.
That's right, vibrating air.
That's all it is, right?
It's yep.
Vibrating air, how can we sell it? And they put little grooves on a black round plastic thing, and they began selling it, and they figured out how to sell vibrating air. And the way to sell vibrating air is to make everybody else who makes vibrating air feel like they're not qualified. Only the stars on their record label are truly qualified to vibrate air correctly. That's how stupid the marketing plan was. And they created stars. And what the star system in the music business does, it separates people from their own music. And I was like, you know, I think that passion transcends payment every time. And I'll bet you anything that in the core DNA of what music and art is, people will react to what it was intended for. And so we started a all-volunteer-run broadcast. I do not get paid. The engineers don't get paid. The TV directors don't get paid. The camera people, the ushers, most of the audience comes for free. They're called WoodSongs Partners. It goes free to radio. It goes free to American Armed Forces Radio Network. It goes free to public television. And you can go online to our website and watch upwards of 700 broadcasts for free. The currency that WoodSong spends is love, and the artists who come on the show are not paid. They come for free, whether it's Bobby Osborne, who was just on the show with his band, or Michael Cleveland, or Ralph Stanley. Chris Thiele has been on the show 8 or 9 times already. Doyle Lawson, J.D. Crow, you know, everyone from Jacob Dylan to Nico Case, Brandi Carlile, Judy Collins, Exile. I mean, you know, we just had Kenny Loggins on the show. They come for free, and local hotels put them up for free.
Oh, my.
Restaurants feed them for free.
Oh. How in the world? How in the world?
The currency that Woodsong spends is love.
Is love.
Now you know why folk rhymes with broke.
It's in all of those programs that are available on the archive that you have online. You don't sell any of those on DVDs, do you?
No, we refuse to.
Yep. Yep. See, I wanted to put that in there because I want people to know that you're doing this for free, and then you're not then trying to sneak in the back door by selling all these nice package programs they can watch
Correct.
For nothing, the same
Correct.
Way that everybody got into the studio in the beginning with. That's just amazing.
And the emotional currency of the broadcast, of what it's intended for, you know, this is why radio stations have picked it up. You know, over 500 radio stations air it. We just took the show to Ireland, and 2,000 people filled the beautiful theater along the Liffey River in Dublin. 2,000 people in another nation came to see this little radio show, you know, because we're on the air in Ireland. And, it was like, I remember when Kevin and I, you know, first sat down, and I rang him up and said, you know, I have this idea, and I need a little studio to do it, and we met at a little coffee shop, and he heard me out, and his first words were, "You know you're crazy." And then he thought some more. He goes, "And you know everybody else is going to think you're crazy too." And then he thought some more, and he goes, "I'm in."
What was your first thought when you first thought you were going to put together a show? Of course, then I guess you were just thinking radio broadcast, correct?
No.
Okay.
No. If we did this, it was going to be as big as the music deserved. Folk music is the grand motherlode of worldwide art. It's everything. And if this worked, and we uncovered this grassroots audience out there, then it would be very, very big. It would be as big as the Grand Ole Opry or Prairie Home Companion or any of these other magnificent, wonderful legacy shows that we could only dream of standing up in their shadow in. You know, but that was the goal. You know, I wasn't doing it to play. I don't do anything to play around. And I'm not going to waste anybody else's time, including my friend Kevin. You know, that we're either going to do this right and do it like we mean it, or let's not bother.
How did
so
you?
We were going after it from the first show.
Okay. How did you get? Let's say the first show. How did you attract artists? What was your method of doing this? I mean, you have some credibility, seriously, as a performer and a writer. But how did you start the first show we're going to put together and make this concept work? How did you think about putting those people on stage?
You need two things when you do something like this: the ability to beg. and knee pads.
Okay. You also need a thick hide, don't you?
We invested in knee pads and we learned to beg.
And you got rejected. I bet you got rejected sometimes.
There was a lot of friends that, you know, I think the first artist we ever had on the show was Rob McNerlin from Ashland, who's a good buddy of mine. The second show, I called up, you know, my friend J.D. Crow, and he came out with just his banjo in a little tiny studio that barely sat 15 people.
Mm.
And the third artist that we had on the show was my friend Homer Ledford. I'm sure a lot of your listeners remember this wonderful, wonderful man, Homer Ledford from Winchester, Kentucky, wonderful bluegrass artist and one of the finest instrument makers in North America. And a dear friend of mine, he was the third artist.
Mm.
So I was going for the artist that would help establish that this idea was really worth it. And when other artists saw that those guys were doing it, then they would be willing to do it too. And that's what happened.
Well, I mean, I think that's it. And you have credibility. Once you start building up that credibility with that first group, and then
yeah, only those who don't know me well think I have credibility.
Well, then maybe there's
everybody,
a lot.
Everybody who knows me goes, what?
What? Now, when the first show, let's say the first show that you did, and because if people listen to the show now, it's evolved to this, and maybe it was always this. But Michael will come on the show, and I'm speaking to people that have never heard it or seen it. If there's still three people on the planet that fit that category, Michael will do an introduction. You do some chat and discussion with the artist and talk about what they're doing so the audience gets it. They perform. The way it works now is then you might do a song or two at some point. Was that always your format?
The format was always I come out and do a song. And the rest of the show is dedicated to the artist. Why do we do that? Because I want to make sure that this is a program that is presented from the artist's point of view. This is not a fan point of view mm-hmm. program. It's from the artist's point of view. And I think that's what fans are interested in. So, you know, there's what makes Woodsongs different from every other live audience radio show. Grand Ole Opry, Austin City Limits, E-Town, Mountain Stage, Prairie Home Companion all have the exact same thing in common with each other. And I have to say, they're all brilliant programs. They're brilliant. They're legacy. They've been around a lot longer than Woodsong. What they all have in common is that the artist does a concert set to the theater, and the big audience, the worldwide global radio audience, is listening in.
Mm-hmm.
Woodsongs flips the audience. Number one, it's a musical conversation.
There you go.
It's not a concert set. It's a musical conversation. And the second thing is, the artists are not performing to the people in the theater. The people in the theater are watching a radio TV broadcast get produced. They applaud, they laugh, they encourage, they cheer like a normal audience. But our artists are on stage performing to the big global multimedia audience. They're not performing to the folks in the theater.
Mm.
That makes it very interesting mm-hmm. for people in the theater. because the direction is so unexpected.
You also do something, Michael, and of course I think the show is phenomenal. I just your taste in music and what you present is exactly what that I am intrigued by. But you also do a neat thing in that you will have a performer, since we've mentioned JD. Okay, everybody knows JD is a great banjo player, and Homer Ledford and the mandolin. You take a minute for the people listening, excuse me, and you talk about what the artist is doing, and you even talk about the instrument that the artist is playing, and maybe its origin, and maybe their, where they picked it up and how they picked it up, so they get a little bit of a historical perspective into what's going on, which is, to me, adds so much value to these broadcasts.
Well, you know, I just know, because I'm doing it from my own point of view. When I was a kid, I grew up next door to a banjo player named Pete Seeger. I wanted to know what kind of strings he used, what kind of skin did he use for his head, what was the neck made out of, what kind of bridge did he have on his banjo. I wanted to know everything about the instrument. And so, you know, I'm just interpreting what I like about it. And artists are very proud and possessive of their instruments. They'll talk about their instrument forever. And even for myself, I mean, I have this standing joke when I'm out on tour and, you know, we're doing sound check, and I tell the sound manager, the stage manager, I go, okay, there's my banjo. There's my daughter. Don't ever touch my banjo. Don't you dare touch my banjo.
That's the way it is. That's the way it is.
I want your audience to know I'm just kidding. But, I mean, the principle is there. The artists are extremely proud. And when you ask J.D. Crowe about his banjo, he will light up. When you talk to Chris Feely about what kind of pick he's using, he will describe that pick for 5-6 minutes if we let him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he is specifically using a certain kind of pick, and he never gets asked that, and he wants to let you know why.
And they have very articulable reasons. It's not just someone gave it to them or they found it. They can tell you exactly why this edge and this sound and this flexibility. And you know what I'm talking about. You're right. The passion is unbelievable.
Yep. Yeah. Tommy Emmanuel, you know, he, you know, we're so happy for him. He just got married, but his guitar is like his wife, too. You know, his guitar is as important to him as his new bride. And, you know, there's a reason he plays that guitar, and there's a reason why the guitar has those marks on it. And why is there a hole on the side? You know, how did that happen? And, you know, he loves to talk about it. And I think the audience wants to know those stuff.
Mm. You're right. I do too. I think it's a huge part of your show. I mean, having the artist perform is phenomenal, because you can see the greatest in the world show up on your stage. As you said, they show up for nothing. You told me last time we talked, you maybe had one that couldn't make it. And was it a snowstorm or something? I mean, the attendance of the people that commit to play on stage at Woodsongs is phenomenal. The percentage of people that show up when they say they're going to do it.
In 733 broadcasts, all artists not being paid a cent, having to pay their own travel, we've only had two not show up.
Wow.
And both were, one was sick, the other was weather-related.
Yeah, wow.
The one that was weather-related was Ellis Paul. He was at the airport on the dog leg. He was on his way, but he got snowed in. You know, he went from Boston to Chicago, was taking the dog leg to Lexington, and Chicago was snowed in. He was on his way. He couldn't make it.
You know, there's just no way to express in words that, well, it is. There is a word, love. You're right. The currency is love. You have to keep coming back to that concept. It's love of the music, and the fact that that'll happen in the way you've described it. It's the currency. You've said it before. The currency of Woodsongs is love, and that's exactly
right.
What it is.
We've become a society afraid to use that word.
You're right. You're right.
But that is what it is. I mean, the challenge that Woodsongs presents for artists is, how much do you love the audience? If we're willing to work for free, are you willing to do the same? And so we've had, you know, artists like Tommy Emmanuel come on the show 8 times. You know, Blind Boys of Alabama are coming back for the 4th time. Blind Boys of Alabama and all those Grammys. Victor Wooten, Bela Fleck's been on the show several times. And the challenge is always the same. You know, how much do you love your own audience? Do you care enough about them to do this? And the answer is always yes.
Do you think listeners get it? Do you think the listeners understand really the dedication from the artist? I mean, we're telling them now, but do you think without the words being expressed, do you think that they really get the dedication of the artist coming to the stage?
We live in a skeptical, materialistic, selfish, me-first world filled with emotional apprehension about everything. We live in a society that 56% of the families break up in divorce after pledging forever to each other. You know, we don't live in a world where love can be the currency of anything. There's got to be a catch, right? And so what our job is, what my job as an artist, is to just keep proving it. And the greatest testament of the power of this kind of currency, I think, is the Woodsongs crew that puts the show together. Mm-hmm. And the audience eventually does come around. So we win the audience over one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's conversations like this with that, you know, when folks like you, Steve, open up your show that we can talk about it and explain to folks, this is real. This is really happening. It's happening right here in Kentucky, and it's going all over the world, and yes, it really is free.
It's amazing. It's just amazing that what you've done, what you've created, what is going so strong now. Like you said, you just came back from Ireland, and people over there probably were waiting for you to show up.
Yeah, it was. Well, when I went to Ireland, I wanted to give them a big dose of American bluegrass, and of course, we were using all Irish bluegrass artists. And did I lose you?
No.
Okay. We were using all Irish bluegrass artists, but I surrounded the convention center in downtown Dublin, Ireland, along the Liffey River, beautiful summer's evening. I surrounded them with bluegrass buskers. Just dozens of Irish performers, all performing for free, all with banjos and fiddles and mandolins. All these Irish bands playing American bluegrass music the night that Woodsongs was there. And they all did it for free.
Wow.
So we brought that currency to Dublin, Ireland with us. We're doing the same thing in Eureka Springs, Arkansas in a couple weeks. We're taking the show to Arkansas. Beautiful 1,000-seat Cowboy Theater. Michael Martin Murphy's coming. Leroy Troy and the Tennessee
Band
is coming.
Yeah.
And they're all coming for free.
It's a great show. I the first time we did this, Michael, which I think was in January, we were talking. People were, well, who is, they were, there's a little chat room that's open. And they're, who's this guy? What's he doing? I said, go look. And I type back to him as I'm talking. That's why there's clicks sometimes that I don't mean, but, I say, go look at Woodsongs. Yeah. Go look at Woodsongs. Go look at this. When we're off the air now, go Google Woodsongs. And then I've had people respond back that, What a great thing that is. And now they understand the concept of what you're doing. And I still think they have a hard time comprehending how you started out and what you're doing. And it's every time, every week you have a show that the radio broadcasts are everywhere. The TV broadcasts, almost every, I don't know if there's a state that doesn't pick it up at some point. I guess maybe there could be one somewhere, but everything is available on the Woodsongs website, and you can watch them as often as you want. And it's the greatest music in the world. It just is.
Yeah, we would love folks to come. We tape the show every Monday evening at a beautiful theater, beautiful historic theater called the Lyric Theater. For years, we were at the Kentucky Theater, which we love dearly, and we just in January moved to this new theater. It's bigger. It has a greater technological resource of the stuff that we need to make a better broadcast there. It sounds better for the audience. It's more room for the artists, and it's right in downtown Lexington, which is a beautiful host city. We couldn't be in a better city, and the reason I say that is because the people here are so willing to go on this kind of adventure. And they support the live broadcast of Woodsongs 44 weeks a year. We do 44 new shows a year, and the audience shows up every Monday night.
It's really, it's if you go there, folks, and it's easily accessible, and as he said, there's 44 shows, you can find one. But when you're sitting in the audience, you suddenly realize, Michael, that I'm part of a live radio show, and because there's you do the thing where you're looking, you're counting down time to go on, and there's people, you know, everybody gets to shout out, you know, Woodsong's Old Time Radio Hour, but you're actually watching a directed radio show that's also being filmed. But all of a sudden, you are captivated so much into what you feel like you're on stage because you're part of that broadcast in a very real way.
Yeah, and well, and a lot of times we bring the kids up on stage after the show's over for the encores. We try to make them feel. We try to make children feel part of the broadcast too. You know, it's volunteer run, but I'll tell you what, we run that thing tighter than a gnat's butt on an ice cube. It goes to the minute in most shows because we had the most brilliant engineer in the state of Kentucky, Kevin Johnson. We called him Darth Fader because of the faders on his mixing board. And he had this big, booming voice. He sounded like he was in the movie Star Wars. But we had Darth Fader behind the board, and 99 out of 100 shows, we would begin and end in exactly 59 minutes with no editing.
Wow.
Because we weren't up there to waste the artist's time or the audience time. And Kevin and I were like in spiritual sync with each other. He knew the cues. He'd fire them off. I'd keep things going. And we'd begin and end the broadcast in exactly 59 minutes. And when radio got it, what they got was a clean, unfiltered broadcast exactly the way it happened, and that's the old-time nature of what the Woodsongs is. People misunderstand the old-time part. What's old-time about Woodsongs is the way we do it. What's not old-time is who's on it.
Yeah, okay, I get that. The show is produced in a way that radio used to be. It was all timed down, and it's all perfectly done. It looks very informal and very relaxed, but you're actually watching the clock, and you know you're going to produce a product that's, like you say, is 59 minutes, so it ships out ready to go. And yeah, the artists are anything but old time. But I didn't get that before, but now I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you can't look at an artist like Chris Thiele and say he's old time.
No,
he's not.
Nope.
But the way the show is done is old time. What Chris is part of is old time. Look at this Monday. This Monday I have one of the finest legendary songwriters out of Appalachia. His name is Cy Conn. And he's got a brand new bluegrass album that he's done with the Looping Brothers, which is one of the finest bluegrass, most awarded bluegrass bands in the nation of Germany. And they're one of the artists on the show. The other artist on the same show is one of the greatest blues masters in North America. His name is Guy Davis. That raw, old-time acoustic blues. Guy is a master, Grammy Award-winning proselyte of old-time Lightning Hopkins-type blues. So here you have a blues player, a German bluegrass band, and an Appalachian songwriter all on the same show.
And it all works.
Oh, it works great.
And folks,
you know why? Because love has no borders.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But love doesn't care what bin you're in.
and that's the point, and that helps me make to this point that if you go see the show, you know, he'll have these different guests on, but they're all on stage at the same time. They're just not all performing, but they're all, you can see like Guy Davis looking over at Cy Conn in your mind, you can see this happening, and they're all like, yeah, this is really great. They all like each other, and you can see they want to play with each other. They all love the music that each artist is performing with. They're not all performing at the same time, but most of the time I've seen it, everybody's kind of there or nearby, and they're all digging each other, which is great.
Well, you're dancing around something that I had made a goal of mine since the day I started the show. And I knew this to be a fact because I've played hundreds of festivals around the country, just as an artist and a performer. When you go to a bluegrass festival or a folk festival or a Celtic festival, it doesn't matter. When you go to these festivals, the greatest music at the festival doesn't happen on stage. When you go to Telluride or Merlefest, the great music doesn't happen on the main stage. It happens in the parking lots and the campgrounds. this music is best played by members of its own audience. And so when I designed Wood Songs, I wanted the artist to become part of the audience.
Oh, brilliant.
You see? And see, that's what you're noticing.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that you're noticing that. It's great. You know, when you know, artist A is playing, artist B is sitting there just, you know, they're, it's a total different bag from them. I rarely put two artists of the same genre on the same show. You know, they're totally different, and they become mutual admiration society members for each other.
Well, brilliant. Brilliant. I thought I just accidentally discovered something turned part of your grand scheme.
Yeah, that shows you have a good eye and a good ear. But it's cool, isn't it, when they're sitting there they become part of the audience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In front of everybody.
That's right. Because you're sitting there in the audience and you're watching one artist perform and you're thinking that, and then you look over out of the corner of your eye that, and the other band is like, they want to join in. They still have their instruments in their hand. Nobody's finished for the day. They usually involve them a couple times throughout a program, and you can see they're tapping their feet and they're thinking, yeah, we might want to walk over there and join in. And that's brilliant. It's a brilliant concept.
Well, so far it works.
Works well. Works well, my friend. Where do we go from here? We have plans for shows. You're going to go to Arkansas. Everything's still rolling along, I assume.
Yeah, we had a big shock this week. I started the show day one with my very dear friend and brother Kevin Johnson, and he's the one we call Darth Vader. And this past Monday, I got to the Lyric Theater, and the artists are arriving, and the crew is there. And it's amazing that, you know, with no currency being transferred for anybody, the people arrive like clockwork, just when they're supposed to. And Kevin was a little late. And the Lyric Theater phone rang, and there was somebody on there. They had to talk to me personally. It was the fire marshal. And I thought, uh-oh, they're going to have a parade, or they got to shut things down, or there's a problem or something. I got on the phone, and he was authorized by the parents to tell me that Kevin was no longer with us, that he had passed away that afternoon, and they had found him at his house. And I had to do that show that night. Jerome Galt, the assistant engineer, stepped in. I told Jerome what happened, but don't say anything. And he ran a flawless start-to-finish 59-minute show. Kevin trained him perfectly. And then I announced to the audience afterwards that we had lost Kevin. And, our friend and brother and Darth Vader was not going to be in any more shows. And the audience just simultaneously just stood up and gave Kevin a standing ovation. It was very, very beautiful. But Jerome Galt was personally trained by Kevin. Brandon Eves was another one of our engineers. He was personally trained by Kevin. Brandon and Jerome ran the shows in Dublin, Ireland. And they did a flawless job. Kevin was a magnificent mentor and teacher. And so Wood Songs is now in the hands of those that Kevin taught. And Wood Songs will continue on. We are working to protect the legacy of what Kevin helped start.
Wow.
That's the attitude that we have. You know, I wanted to, you know, when I found out Monday, it was like, why don't you just cancel the show? But we had one artist come all the way in from Canada. The other one flew in from New York. You can't cancel it. You can't do that to them. They're not getting paid. They're not getting compensated. They're here. The audience is here. You know, we had to do the show. But we decided to do it as part of the legacy of Kevin Johnson. This is what he started. This was his work. This is what he would have wanted done.
Hmm. It's a wonderful tribute.
It's a heartfelt one. It's also a difficult one. When, you know, Kevin was my friend, and he was a brother, and he was my family member, and he was my biggest critic, and he was a nemesis, and he was the most loyal companion I've ever had. And I say nemesis and critic in a positive way, because Kevin was an extremely intelligent man that had strong opinions. He didn't do anything because anybody told him to do it. He didn't do anything at Woodsongs because I said to do it. You had to convince Kevin it was the right thing, but I'll tell you what. Once he decided you were right, once he decided that he was in. Done. Didn't have to question it, no matter how badly he felt. His health was horrible this past year. No matter how poorly he felt, how much pain he was in, how uncomfortable it was for him to walk down the ramp to his perch at the soundboard, he was there every single week. He did not quit, and he didn't stop. And, you know, how can you not admire a man like that?
Well, he's left a great legacy behind. As you said, he's trained some people, and the show's going to continue, and because of his great effort.
Well, starting this Monday, those that watch the show online are going to see a permanent tribute to Kevin on every online broadcast. It will be part of Woodsongs from Monday forward forever, for as long as I'm able to have a say in it.
Will this be the ovation, or?
No, we'll okay. Let folks see it.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Yeah.
You can't turn Woodsongs into a mausoleum. I mean, right. It's got to be a happy event,
right.
Especially for those artists that are coming on the show.
Right.
At the same time, I want to make sure that Kevin's memory and our appreciation for who he was as a person, as our friend, and his contributions to help make this show even exist is never forgotten.
Okay. I'm sure it'll be a wonderful tribute every show, and people should pay attention and watch it and get into the habit of, if you can catch Woodsongs, catch it live on wherever you can. If you can see it, live music is the way to go always. And not everybody can make it to Lexington, Kentucky, but if you can make it to Arkansas, if you can make it to Ireland, drop in and Michael's traveling around with the program and see it live. If not, listen to it. And if not, at your leisure, at 3 a.m, go to the Woodsongs. If you're just like awake and what am I going to do, go to the Woodsongs page and find a show and watch it and listen and enjoy it.
Yep. Have a big archive. It works 24/7.
It's a great, I mean, really, if you're ever just, and you're also archived do you have a special spot at the University of Kentucky too? Did you tell me that?
The Niles Center at the University of Kentucky, Professor Ron Penn is the official global archive of Woodsongs now. They look at Woodsongs like the early days of the Grand Ole Opry and stuff, and so they want to protect the growth, the history, the scripts, all the scripts that I used on the show are housed there. The photographs are all stored at the University of Kentucky, and the archive center will be at the Niles Center near the library on the UK campus. And Professor Ron Penn, who's the head of Appalachian Studies, a great fiddle player and a wonderful guy, spearheaded this effort to protect the history and legacy of the broadcast, which I think is wonderful that they want to do that. We had our choice between doing it at the University of Kentucky or the Smithsonian. And it would have been kind of cool to do it, and say, oh, well, we're associated with the Smithsonian Institute, right? But this is our home. And I believe you got to dance with the one that brung you. And so since our home area, you wanted to protect the legacy, that's who we went with.
And people go there, they can see what can they watch the film there? Can they see the physical documents that you're talking about with the script? Or?
Yeah, all the DVDs, which include the DVDs, the DVD storage of the show includes the pre-show, Judge Ray Korn's opening up, warming up the audience, the intro of the show, the mistakes, the few times we have to stop the show or somebody's string breaks or a kid is in the lobby and pulls the fire alarm like they did with Riders in the Sky, and then the post-show encores. All of that is at the University of Kentucky.
What a great resource, and the program itself is a great resource. Michael, I'm so glad that you were able to come in today and chat a little bit, get me updated on the show. I always enjoy talking to you because I just like the ideas and the concepts that you have, and they're always true, always the same. Just that the way you express them is so much better than I could ever attribute to you. So I thank you so much for coming by in a difficult week and continuing the effort to get the word out.
Well, I appreciate your kindness. It might be worth mentioning, I'm performing a concert with PsyCon tomorrow night at the Rudyard Kipling in Louisville, and then Wednesday night we're going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina together.
Yes.
In concert. So if your many listeners are out there and they feel like coming up to say hello, bring your singing voices, and I'll have my long neck banjo, and Cy will be there with his wonderful songs. We'll have just a great evening of front. We'll turn every theater into a front porch.
There you go. There you go. Michael,
and
I'm good.
Steve, thank you for having me on.
I listen. Anytime, buddy. Anytime we can catch up, I'm happy to do it. We should do this every 6 months just to see where you are.
You're very kind. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. And Michael, when you hang up, I'm going to later we'll talk about giving away some tickets to the show coming up on the 21st. And I'll take care of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be a good one. Yeah, we'll tell them all about it.
I'll be
more than happy to meet them the night of the show.
All right. Thanks, Michael Jonathan.
Bye.
See you, bye. Thanks again to Michael Jonathan so much for coming in and updating us on Wood Songs and everything going on there, and the spirit and legacy left behind by his good friend Kevin Johnson, Darth Vader. Thanks for tuning in, folks.